welcome back to the NarniWeb.com Council, the NarniWeb podcast. I am Rillian, and today we have Jim Fan joining us. Jim Fan, welcome back.
Thank you.
And today we have someone new who we've been wanted to have on the podcast for a while, and actually he wanted to be on for a while, and we just now were able to get him on, a new member to the council, Dr. Elwyn Ransom. Doctor, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. I really appreciate the chance getting to be here, talk about and listen about all kinds of awesome Narnia-related subject matter.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of people know us from the forums, and a lot of people, I'm sure, know you from the forums. And which sub-forum do you moderate again?
I'm already a moderator, which, frankly, I'm confused as to how a whole lot of people would know me, because I barely go anywhere else besides Narnia and Christianity and the spare room. And even in the spare room, it's only a few of my favorite topics. But I'm glad if I have achieved some notoriety on the forum.
Well, I certainly remember you from Narnia and Christianity. I mean, I'm not on the forums that much. If I'm on the forums, it's on the general discussion forum, the casting forum, and I also like to jump into Narnia and Christianity, and you've got some great stuff to say there, and so we're glad to have you on the podcast. And anyway, we're going to do an epic podcast recapping Voyage of the Dawn Treader. But we were kind of looking at how many emails we had, and that's great. You guys have sent in a ton of emails, and we thought, well, since we have so many emails, why don't we just do, since I didn't really organize them at this point, maybe in the future I'll be more efficient at organizing what are the questions to bring up, but we have about a dozen emails, and we thought we'd basically make this a Q&A, where we go through the emails and see what people have to say, and also try to answer their questions. Some are easier than others, some are longer than others, and so I thought we'd go ahead and do that today.
Sounds like fun to me.
Yeah, it should be great.
All right, well, our first email is from Lucy P., and she says, I really enjoyed your podcast. I really appreciate it. Here are some questions for the mailbox. Question 1, what are the chances of the new distributor keeping the old Narnia logo? Question 2, in light of his previous work, how do you think Michael Apted will affect the future Narnia films?
Hmm.
So, first question, the logo.
Jim Fan, you're the graphics person.
I don't know. I would think so. Unless for some really weird reason, Disney holds the rights to it, doesn't want to give it up, but I think that's pretty unlikely. So I would say I wouldn't be surprised if they kept the logo.
Yeah, earlier Glumpuddle and I were talking about the logo question, and he had mentioned in the last podcast the most recent in-memory example of a film franchise being passed from one distributor to the other was Hellboy, and he and I both noted that they did not change the logo at all. All they did was slap the 2 on it and then say the Golden Army. I'm guessing that if there's any logo change at all, it would be only because of aesthetics, you know, varying it from one film to the other, similar to the way in the Harry Potter films, they always change the color and, you know, maybe, you know, make it a little bit more, you know, rough looking or something for a particular film. Just from film to film, they do that just to add a little variety.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be any problem with the logo, partly because there's no... Disney is not attached to that Narnian font, okay? It's just Narnia. There's no, it's not like New Line Cinema was attached to the Lord of the Rings font or anything, and there's, so I don't think we will see a problem with the logo. I do wonder if we're going to see a different exit for the trailers, because that is kind of a more of a Disney marketing field, I think, than what we had before. And, of course, they had kind of a running theme with the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah. I would not mind a change with that, especially because in the end of the trailer, you see a mountain range. Well, both trailers, you see the mountain range and then the Narnia, all that. But Voyage of the Dawn Treader, of course, is a sea voyage. So.
But you could still do something with that, you know, an island or whatever. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary to carry that over.
That's not necessary, but that's something where I would not be surprised to see that go. So that's the only thing I think, as far as any kind of logo affiliation, that's the only thing I think would go. All right, and she also asked, in light of his previous work, how do you think Michael Apted will affect the future Narnia films? I mean, as far as how he will affect it, he'll affect it big time. He's the director. As far as answering it in light of other films, I've only seen Amazing Grace, as far as his previous films.
As have I.
I've only seen Amazing Grace, too. And I,
so we're all pretty...
we're well-versed in one of Mr. Apted's films. I was very excited, I must say, to find out that that he was going to be helming Don Treader just by virtue of seeing Amazing Grace. I was even more interested to find out that the scriptwriter for Amazing Grace, at least initially, was attached to work on the Don Treader script.
And the composer.
And the composer, David Arnold, I believe. And the only other film that
really
I've seen that he did, he's not as popular, at least that I know of, as, you know, like Hans Zimmer or James Horner or something like that. He did do the music for Independence Day. And but just in terms of Mr. Apted's direction of Amazing Grace, it's such a humanity to it, and he was, especially for those who are looking forward to elements of faith and Christianity being echoed in Voyage of the Dawn Treader, amazing. It was not a title. It was the story of, you know, the abolitionist Williams, his faith, and they were not afraid to present that for what it was. And not just general, you know, believe and follow your heart kind of faith. This is
Disney theology.
Real, seeing action and inner beliefs, faith. Yeah. And I would love to see that respected in the voice.
Well, he's
of
not
going
to, I mean, we know he's not going to shy away from it. And
exactly.
We could go back and forth as to where Adamson shied away from things. I don't think he shied away from anything in particular, at least for any kind of faith reasons. I think there were a couple points that I really thought were significant that he said he didn't understand, like the deeper magic. He never made it into the film, which I was really surprised by. But I liked Amazing Grace. I thought it was well directed. I liked the music. I thought the characters seemed to be well directed, and I'm just trying to think of what, you know, a director does, bringing the story to life and also directing getting the actors to portray the characters for the cohesive story. I think that it worked well, and it was a well-made movie, if not, even though it wasn't necessarily a really hugely popular movie.
I think the thing that excites me the most, almost, is because Amazing Grace is not your typical movie. It's not an action or an epic. It's basically a lot of talking.
It's a drama.
But
and politics.
But he pulls it off amazingly well.
Politics.
So the fact that he can do that makes me feel much better that he's not going to try and make Don Treader epic just because.
Yeah.
I think he knows how to work the character side of thing and the dialogue. He knows how to direct that kind of thing and make it a very deep movie. And not just epic,
point.
Big battle scenes.
I hadn't thought of that, but I think that's a good point, because he's going to be more familiar with a more dialogue-driven story,
right?
Which is really what Don Treader is. I mean, there's action, sure, and I'll say more adventure than I should say action. But I think that from that perspective, yes, you're right.
Yeah, the only book that I can think of that maybe has more talking, like less epic, is maybe for Cher, because he spent a lot of time traveling. But
Magician's Nephew has
a lot.
Magician's Nephew has a lot of talking,
but it has a lot of special effects, which helps balance out the talking.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
is another thing that the difference in genres will be interesting. We go from a historical character study about the life and work of William Wilberforce to this, you know, major beloved fantasy, and it will, but I just based it, like we've said, on what he did with Amazing Grace, I think that there will be that sense of character, and I'm hoping, just as a writer, I'm hoping for maybe a little more attention paid to the dialogue, and the way in the character development.
Well, you know, it's
personally.
Go ahead, Jim Fenn.
No, go ahead.
No,
oh, I was just going to say that personally, the book has. It doesn't. You don't have to imagine. You don't need to add more epic things. The book has everything you need. So, the fact that he has not really done anything of that scale does not worry me, because the book will take care of that. If he just focuses on making it very real and personal, which is what it needs to be, because that's what it is,
yes,
then I think it will be a success.
Yeah, I mean, there's different directors for different stories. I've actually always said, just with different feels, I would if I heard Andrew Adamson was coming back to direct The Horse and His Boy, I would be thrilled. If I heard he was coming back to direct The Magician's Nephew, I would not be thrilled, because I think that you need different sort of feels for the different books. And you know, one thing I love, because you mentioned Doc, we're calling you Doc now, about the kind of the faith element here. You know, I think of one reason I loved Amazing Grace is it was very real. It felt genuine. It was not he didn't shy away from it, but it also was not preachy. It didn't come across as a preachy and cheesy and kind of propaganda film.
They didn't give an altar call at the end. In fact, when I saw Amazing Grace, the only altar call at the end came from the guy who actually physically stood up at the bottom of the theater, interrupted the bagpipe playing Amazing Grace, and I'm sitting there feeling like a complete heathen, thinking, would you shut up with the gospel presentation? I want to bask in these glorious bagpipes, please. And you're right, though. It hit that balance between not being preachy, but not also going, well, we don't want to be preachy, so let's just make a vague sort of religious movie, and we'll just be all inspirational and talk about having faith and believing in yourself and following your heart and wishing upon a star and all that.
All right. Well, that was from Lucy again, those two questions. And this next one is
Lucy
from
P.
Lucy P., yes. The next one is from. Perhaps not Lucy Pevensey. We don't know. It might be Lucy Phyllis. Who knows? The next one is actually was kind of more to me, sort of a quick question, saying, my name is Aureus99, a fellow Narnia Weber, and I have a question. Did you ever interview any of the characters of the Pevensey children on your podcast? If so, what month year did you do the interview so I can look it up on Narnia Archives? I know you did Ben Barnes, and I was just wondering. Have a good day, Aureus99. The answer to that question is no. I did not ever get a chance to interview any of the others. Not yet. I would like to. It was great interviewing Ben. And just because I mean, I bumped into Anna a few times, but I didn't actually interview her. But yeah, I would love to. So if any of the Narnia cast are listening, hey, you are more than welcome to come on the show. You are invited. This is your formal invitation. Or informal, whatever the case may be. But another question is from Wolfsbane. He says, do you think Dawn Treader will be a different movie since Fox is involved instead of Disney? Because usually when you think of Disney movie, you think of a family or kids movie. Fox doesn't really have that same reputation. Sincerely, Wolfsbane. I mean, again, this isn't... You know, Disney was never making the films. They were distributing them.
Walden Media makes the film.
Their brand was on it. You know, their brand was on it.
It was Walt Disney Pictures and Walden Media, just like it was Walt Disney Pictures and Pixar Animation Studios. Pixar makes the Pixar movies. Walden makes the Walden movies. Disney provides marketing muscle, financing, that sort of thing. And, hey, you get the big, shiny, three-dimensional castle on the front, which is always a perk as well.
Yeah.
I think it does bring some preconceived expectations to a movie. Okay, Prince Caspian. Okay, this Disney's latest epic. Okay. But if it's... Because when people think of Disney, you know, you think of family-friendly, and you think of yada yada, whatever, you know. So I am interested, actually, because I think there could be a difference.
I don't think there'll be a difference as far as the type of movie. I don't think the movie itself will end up any different than it would if it was under Disney.
I think
there will
be
different
expectations.
I think that, yeah, the expectations might be different. I was actually just talking to...
The difference will be mostly, I believe, because of a different director and a different composer. Yeah. And, well, the composer doesn't affect things a discussion, but I really think the different director and different script writers are what's going to be leading to the difference, not just the fact that it's, you know, Fox Walden and not Disney Walden. I think the marketing may change. We're quite certain the release date will be changing, but not the actual look of the film itself.
I mean, there will be different expectational changes, just like what Jim Fan said, because like I was just talking to a friend the other day, and I think oh yeah, I mentioned the new X-Men movie and how I think that I could be really excited about that. And then he says, oh, well, I'm just not excited about anything from Fox. And I thought, well,
ouch.
Yeah, ouch. But then I thought, I didn't mention Narnia, but it occurred to me, I thought, huh, I mean, I wonder if people, because, you know, I wonder if it will affect the expectations there. It very well may, but I mean, again, Narnia is already an established franchise, so okay. Moving on, does we actually have
yes.
emails? Okay, this is from Caitlin. She says, "I heard on the latest Narnia web podcast. I finally got to listen to it. I've got a question for the next podcast. What is your thought on whether or not they make the movie, The Silver Chair and The Last Battle?" P.S. I really want to be the actress for Jill.
Oh, that's new.
And Glump.
Lots of people want to be
Tyrion,
Jill.
Tyrion actually kind of said.
I seem to have picked that up somewhere.
Tyrion actually wants to answer this question. So he sent an email responding to this question because he said he gets it about every week. So I'm just going to give Tyrion's response here. Tyrion, I'm sorry if I'm not going to impersonate your voice. Okay, he says, all the movies will be made if the series continues to be successful. At this point, plans for the Silver Chair depend entirely on how well The Voyage of the Dawn Treader does. We are way, way, way too early to even begin to consider actors for green lighting for the Silver Chair. If you would like to be considered for the role of Jill, you should take the time now and continue to hone your acting skills. Get lots of experience and, this is key, get yourself an agent who can secure an audition for you. In Hollywood, nobody gets cast without an agent. It's just the way it is. Tyrion.
What? Can't Tyrion be an agent? Don't,
don't we wish.
Don't we on NarniaWeb have that power?
Not I'm that sure power. We have power, but not
folks,
that power.
There's a myth out there that Narnia Web is in league with the producers somehow. Just scroll to the bottom of the page, and you'll see the. It's not just there to be legal-like. It says, you know, Narnia Web is not affiliated with Disney Walden, and it would be great if we were. But that's we're a fan site, and we're an awesome fan site, but we're not affiliated with who gets we're not able to make decisions about who gets cast or anything like that, unfortunately.
But don't think we don't have connections either.
Oh, we do have many, many connections. Send us some money and we will use these connections. Lots of money.
In case anyone doesn't know,
we should have an auction.
I don't know if anyone didn't know this. We do not get paid for doing the podcast.
We don't?
No, sorry, dog. Oh, did I not tell you? Yeah, we don't get paid.
Well, goodbye. Huh.
Okay, see
this
ya.
This is so offensive.
Well, in case any of you ever want to know, and this is not for me, the money would not come to me, but just so you know, Tyrion works very hard to maintain the website, along with Fantasia Kitty. I have to give her credit as well here. They both work very hard to maintain the website, and if you ever want to donate, you can certainly do that. There's a link on NarniaWeb. So,
yeah. Tyrion actually hosts the website. Well, I believe it's his own servers, and he installed everything and he maintains everything. And I think it was sometime last year he actually upgraded the entire forum software. So he puts a lot of work into it, and is definitely worth supporting. If you can't donate, then at least click on an advertisement here or there.
Exactly. And yeah, you just come and click on one of those little advertisements, and we get money. Or
exactly.
When I say we, I mean NarniaWeb.
Period.
Which is
Narnia Web. Exactly.
Let's play responsibly.
Okay, this other email. I don't know if there's a question mark in this email.
Well, is it implied?
I don't know.
Just pretend it is.
Okay, let's pretend it is. And you guys can see if maybe it'll pop up as I read it. Okay. But then, oh, I have to see if she actually wanted me to read it, because if she didn't, then... Here, let me...
Yeah, that would be bad.
That would be bad, yeah. Then we get sued. And
we would get sued, and then people would make money off us. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that, we don't,
actually,
we do not
that, that thing about our names, you don't know who Dr. Ellen Ransom is.
No, there is no
Just
Dr.
try
Ellen
going
Ransom.
To your local district court and say, I want to sue Dr. Ellen Ransom. They go, what?
Okay, yes, okay. It was under the heading podcast, so I'm going to go ahead and read it.
All right.
This is a long one. Hi, guys. I love the podcast. Thank you. And listening to all the new Narnia news you report. I'm listening to you guys right now.
Really?
I have an interesting
Whoa,
story to tell, actually.
That's a bit scary.
Yeah,
oh,
this isn't live.
It's a previous podcast. Okay.
Ah, yes. I have an interesting story to tell, actually. Like Lewis, I'm a writer, and I'm currently working on and editing my series, but the interesting thing is my series was originally inspired by Narnia. When Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe came out in theaters, I went with my friend to see the movie, never reading the book when I was younger. Mind you, I'm only 20. When I came out, the idea and concept of a world within a world and finding your way into this new place and being destined for greatness appealed to me so much that I thought I must put it in a book of mine one day. Not soon after the inspiration came to me, I changed the details to suit me and started writing. In addition to the inspiration being from Narnia, I unknowingly used one of Lewis's own names, Caspian. Interesting. My main character is compared to a tiger, and Caspian is also the name of an extinct subspecies of tiger. When I found out Lewis used the name, I was shocked because I had no idea. My name's been altered since to Cassia, or Kasia, I suppose. Which I think could be seen as the female version of Caspian, but that's just me. I think you guys might get a kick out of hearing this about this, which is why I wrote. Keep up the great work, guys. Can't wait till the next podcast. Peace, love, and happiness. MJ Tiger.
My first comment is that she is apparently that mistake has been made before. Who was the author of Bridge to Scythia? I'm trying to remember her name, but she what was that, Jim Fan?
No, I was trying to think. I don't know.
Okay. Well, it'll come to me at some point. But I was at a conference at Wheaton College in September 2005, and I'd never heard of her before. Of course, after that, I couldn't stop hearing about her. But she had written a book, Bridge to Terabithia, and Terabithia she unwittingly stole from The Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Well, actually, it's
talked about the Terabithia. Well,
yeah,
it was
Terabithia,
close.
Right. Very close.
It was... close enough. And the conference was themed after C.S. and the Chronicles of Narnia. That was her opening anecdote. She realized that she had accidentally taken the name from The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, where it mentions the Isle of Terabithia. So one is Terabithia, one is Terabithia. I don't know if she took out the "n" in order to make it a slightly different name, but
a lot of authors.
What's that?
Did she intentionally steal it?
No, not intentionally. It sounds like our letter writer had accidentally taken it, because that's what happens when you're writing something, either you're published or unpublished. You will be inspired or by things that you've read before. I'd like to point out that C.S. Lewis himself was very obviously inspired by the Bible and Bible stories, because that's who he was. He obviously read the Bible. He knew a lot about it. He was a scholar. He knew a lot about other people's mythologies and such. But that influenced him very likely in a lot of ways subconsciously. So he wouldn't have known that Prince Caspian seemed like, you know, King David running away from Saul. He wouldn't have thought that Shift resembled the beast of Revelation. It's perils that a lot of people are finding, and which they very often post about in Narnia.
Yeah, well, you have the whole planet Narnia now, and you have, of course, there's also comparisons between, I mean, look at the Ring of the Nibelung and the Lord of the Rings, and then you have the, in Greek literature, is it Geisa? I forget how to pronounce his name, but one of the characters that I think Glaucon mentions to Socrates is a man who has an invisible ring that makes him invisible. You know, I mean, certain things are around for ages, but that's an interesting email. Good luck to your writing, MJ Tiger. And that is interesting. How do you do I mean, I guess it would have to be some sort of self-conscious Terabithia, because, I mean, I'm just wondering, some people, I can kind of understand that if it's accidental. What I don't understand is when you have, like now, Cyberdyne Systems has invented a robotic kind of body for disabled people, and you have Skynet Technologies, which is a military defense network in Britain. I'm thinking, and in case anyone doesn't know, this is all from Terminator. You have Cyberdyne and Skynet. I'm thinking, why do you people pick these names?
I think some people want to tribute things intentionally. I've read several fantasy books, and it always gets on my nerves a little bit, because anytime the characters are going to another world or something, there will very often be something said like, "Oh, it's just like Lucy going into the wardrobe." I will slap my forehead and go, "It's pretty much fiction. You're setting yourself up. Okay, well, here's the real story." And then ours is it's just a story. Let's give C.S. Lewis as an author your professional courtesy and not mention him in that way. But I think if you love the Chronicles of Narnia, it's going to influence your work, and either intentionally or incidentally.
Yep.
Okay, and we have a couple more, three more. Okay, next one is says Narnia Web. I really enjoy listening to your podcast, and I was wondering what you guys thought about Narnia Web. I really enjoy listening to your podcast, and I was wondering what you guys thought about Will Poulter being cast for the role of Eustace. Thanks, Jordan.
Then or now?
How about now? I mean, this is a good place to kind of, not to steal the recap, but to steal the thunder. But I mean, why don't you kind of sum it up, Jim Fan?
Well, when we first heard about Will Poulter, a lot of people were really excited. I know I was. He seemed absolutely perfect. He looked right. He was the right age. He was what I imagined Eustace to be. But of course, that was, I don't know, how many months has it been? It's been a while.
Last summer.
And
according to Glumpuddle's big list, it was June 2008 when the casting was announced.
Then it was but last I think summer. Something that we failed to take into consideration was that he had already, he was a bit older than we were picturing him. We were taking all of our visuals off of this movie that he did, Son of Rambo, which was done a bit earlier. He recently had a birthday. I think he is 16 now, 15 or 16. He's not as young as I think some people were expecting him to be. I still think he's going to be a great Eustace, but it's just going to have to see how it's going to work out, because that's a lot older.
Yeah.
How old is he now then?
15 or 16. I think he just turned 16.
Someone look it up on the Incompetent Movie Database.
It would seem that that is not as old as Ben Barnes, and is cast as Caspian, who did a really good job for a while. A lot of fans, myself among them, were thinking, okay, Caspian is 30 years old. Caspian is old as I am. We'll have to get used to that. Adjusted, but... the fact that he's 14 or 15 doesn't bother me a whole lot.
He was born 1993, okay. January 28th.
Okay.
So you do the math. I'm hopeless.
Well, actually, by now he would be 16. So that's some actors, despite their age, they always manage to look a little bit younger. I think Elijah Wood has been one of those. I was surprised to find out his age, when I saw him in Lord of the Rings and stuff. Films.
Yeah.
So it's
he was 17 when he got the role there.
13 or 14.
Yeah, like, the thing is, he was 17 when he got the role, 18 when he started filming. There's some actors that can pull it off. I mean, there's certain requirements. Like Caspian had to look roughly the same age as Peter. He looked older than Peter, but not by a whole lot. Both of them look pretty young, so it worked there. The thing is that he has to kind of look like Lucy's little cousin. And we know Georgie's grown up a lot, but I'm not sure how much... I can't find any pictures of him, so I honestly don't know.
The most recent thing I've seen of him was I actually have it saved on YouTube. He was at an award show a few months ago. And okay. Before that, it was an interview that was done last April. And even last April, he could tell, just grown. So
okay.
I don't think he's going to look like Lucy's little cousin.
Probably not. I don't.
Unless she's shot up.
Well, I have the book in front of me, and I do not remember Eustace's age being mentioned in regard in comparison with. For some reason, I always pictured Eustace as being in an age between Edmund and Lucy.
It says that he wouldn't have been able to. It says in the first chapter, I think, that he wouldn't have been able to stand up to a fight to Edmund much to Lucy, much less Edmund.
Just, let alone Edmund. That's right. Okay. Well,
so
that,
he's not that big.
That's
kind of the
problem.
Not read the books.
Here's where it could be a problem. Here's where it could really be a problem, unless they end up trying to change it. Which again, Aslan tells them, Edmund and Lucy, you're too old.
Oh yes, that's true.
And
okay,
if he appears to be older, if he appears,
now.
Go back to your space trilogy.
I think I will. Please continue. Don't mind me.
If he looks older than Lucy,
I'll just be here being heretical.
If he looks older than Lucy, and Aslan says she's too old, but you're not, you know, people are just gonna go, wait, what? Isn't he?
Maybe it's
older?
Supposed to be maturity.
Well, perhaps
we could just assume he meant maturity.
It could be when Aslan said, and it wouldn't. They could just change Aslan's dialogue. That you know, I mean, that's been done before. But Aslan could mean that spiritually, Lucy and Edmund are old because they've been to Narnia three times by now, and Eustace has only been once. So that could be an interpretation of that line in order to offset the age difference.
Let's see if they have already painted themselves into a corner. In Prince Caspian, do they say? I don't think they talk about age. It's just that they have learned what they can from this world. Now it's time for them to...
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, so maybe they'll pull that same...
Dialogue gets changed, yes.
Yeah, maybe they'll pull that same stunt in the new one, and it might be necessary in the new one. I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, there's some actors that can do it, like Thomas Dekker, who's 21. He's playing a 16-year-old in Terminator, and he, you know, he passes it off. Some actors, and Michael J. Fox has been 17 for I don't know how long, how many years now.
He still sounds like he's 17. That's true.
It's like Stuart Little. Hi, Mom.
You know,
hey, Mom. I've never, Mom. How come I've never, you know, gone through puberty? How come my voice isn't stopped crackling?
Okay, now that is that's scary. That's a scarily accurate imitation.
Thank you very much. I do a bunch of people. I do Douglas Gresham too, but
they got the accent for it.
All right. Let's see. I think we have one or two more. All right, questions. Hello, I'm Douglas Gresham. Let's see. Okay, we have this one is from Scrubbers, who has sent me about 50 emails in the last week. He likes to send a lot of emails, and that's okay, Scrubbers. You keep them coming. I don't mind at all. But here's one of his emails. He says, one of my first reactions to another studio doing Narnia was the rating. I know Disney had a strict PG rating, as Disney generally dislikes the PG-13 rating. I thought that another company might not have a problem with being a tad more graphic. That would be a couple of places to amp up the rating in There would be a couple of places to amp up the rating in Voyage, especially when Aslan takes off Eustace's skin. And knowing the studios, the Dark Island, and the Sea Serpent, who knows, maybe it will be a battle with the Serpent, will probably be amped up a bit as well. Want to know what the Council thinks, Scrubbers.
Dawn Treader is a PG, or a G, not anything more than that.
Yeah,
Silverchair, maybe not. Silverchair, I could see going up a little bit, but not Dawn Treader.
Well, Last Battle I could see just because of all the number of death, even if it's not, if it's just implied, it's kind of heavy. But my understanding was that it was actually Walden who was more keen on a PG rating than Disney.
I don't know.
That's what I thought. Maybe I'm wrong. But that would be a first. I'm never wrong.
Hello?
are you back with us?
Yes. Apparently, I'm out there momentarily.
Okay.
I think that if they could do Prince Caspian and had ranked PG, this, by the way, this is the U.S. rating system for our international listeners.
Yeah.
That with this Reaper Chief skewering Telmarine's face, and they keep that to PG, then I think they could do Aslan tearing off a dragon scales or dragon skin and keep it under a PG rating.
Well, yeah, the beheading and just, I mean, of course, but then, as Warrior for Jesus mentioned one time, in Australia, Prince Caspian received the same rating as Matrix.
Oh, really? Now,
really? Because they're looking at the level of, comparing language and sexual content and violence.
It depends on country standards.
I guess it does. I mean, there wasn't a lot of blood in Matrix, but there were a lot of people died, which does have some. It does tie into Prince Caspian, although he thinks that that's a case where they just really screwed up on, you know, what to rate their movies. But I think it was an M15 is how they do it. It was one of the ratings in Australia, and I think that's what they both received. Oh. So.
Well, that may also depend on the ratings boards or even a country's cultural standards for, okay, what's worse? You know, naked people running around in a movie, bad words said every 5 minutes, or acts of violence either on or off screen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have officially decided, and we will use our Narnia web connections to make sure it doesn't get a PG-13 rating. Next question is... Next question. Hello, I enjoyed your last podcast. It's fun to hear other Narnia fans discuss Narnia news and etc. A question for the next podcast. What are your expectations for the Voyage of the Dawn Treader film? What do you want most out of this film? Any particular scenes you couldn't live without? Twin Image. And that's an email from Twin Image. Mm-hmm. What do you expect for the film?
Well, that's a whole other podcast.
That's a whole other podcast. Yeah. Like Jim Ben mentioned in the last one, if they do a bad job on the movie, we aim to misbehave. So
you have to say that in your Captain Malcolm Reynolds voice.
Sorry, I am to misbehave.
There we go.
Yeah.
But that's a Firefly reference there. For
actually, that was somebody. So.
About the film Serenity, but
I'm gonna start throwing out different my favorite TV show references. You know.
Oh yes, and it'll no longer be a Narnia Web podcast. As for scenes that I can't live without,
that's probably the best question to answer here.
That is a really good question. I would point back to what you folks were talking about in the last podcast, where we're willing as you know, just diehard frothing at the mouth fans, we're willing to give them, you know, the adaptation folks a bit of leeway in terms of how Prince Caspian has changed the plot details. You know, Caspian blew the horn before he'd even gotten inside Truffle Hunter's tunnel, all of that, because you can see where, okay, we're reasonable. This needs to be story-wise maybe structured a little bit different. But if it's just changes for the sake of changes, that's where, you know, we don't just want to be snarky fans and go, well, you know, you can't, you know, have them fight the sea serpents, you know, for longer than 5 minutes, because that's the way it is in the book. I wouldn't mind an extended sea serpent battle, but there has to be a good reason in terms of maintaining the story's integrity and the themes of the original story to make any changes like that or cut scenes or add scenes.
Yeah. Personally, I can't really pick out a few scenes that are my favorite. I mean, obviously Lucy and the Magician's house and stuff, but basically the whole book, pretty much. There's not much I want to see changed. I think it needs very, very little change to make a good movie.
Well said. Was that well said, Doc?
That was. I mean, the whole book is the scene that we can't do without. Let's put it that way.
You actually missed the reference. That was another Firefly line. You're supposed to say it had a kind of poetry to it.
Okay,
Jesus, nothing so deceiving as a low-down, dirty deceiver. Okay.
That is a quote I missed. I think that if I had to pare it down from, okay, the whole book is the scene we can't do without, I would say Eustace's redemption, which in a lot of ways is even more more powerful than Aslan dying for Edmund in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I would love to have Eustace's redemption be kept in just as it is, no changes, no dialogue alterations, mm-hmm. and next, Aslan's country. That's what I'm looking forward to. The most, I literally sit here and get chills just thinking about it, because when I picture Aslan's country and the way Lewis described it, the wall of water, this incredibly towering mountain range, this beautiful world beyond the edge of Narnia, I think I want every detail preserved.
I mean, the scene that I think back to the book and to the actually kind of the folks in the Family Radio Theater drama, my favorite was Reepy Cheep's whole departure there, with him sailing through the lilies, where he pulls out his coracle, he throws his sword into the water, and I've thought so many times how I would visualize that on camera, have a close-up of the sword as it lands, you know, with them in the background, you know. But I just love that whole bit with Lucy hugging him goodbye and Eustace trying to thank him and can't really find the words, and Reepy Cheep saying there's nothing that needs to be said. I just love that scene, and I think that's probably the one that I could not. You want to say what I could not live without? I could not live without that scene.
Wow.
Filmmakers, take note.
Yes.
And also, I and I'm not just saying this as like the Narnia and Christianity guy, but I would love if you have to change every other dialogue in the film, at least keep Aslan, you know, when the lamb has become Aslan, and then he says, "In the other world, I have another name. You must learn to know me by that name." That's as close as Lewis himself got to saying, okay, this is a story about Jesus Christ. You know,
Pretty much, that's what
his name is in the other world. I mean, nobody's going to hear that and think, I wonder what his name is in the other world. Maybe it's Buddha, you know? you know what he's talking about. And they might decrease the direct, frank nature of it, but I really hope they do keep that and maintain that connection. You know, there's an Aslan here, and might want to get to know him as well.
Because if they miss that, you can miss so much of the whole series.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, I've told people before again and again and again. These books are not allegory. If you want to read allegory, you read The Pilgrim's Progress. You read Everyman. That's allegory, where every person, every place represents something. This is not even, I mean, Lucy and Susan are not Mary Magdalene and Mary Mother of Jesus. Okay, I'm sorry. That's not the kind of allegory this is. This isn't even Aslan represents Jesus. No. This is a story where, let's say God created another world. Let's say you had the Son of God personified in this world. How might he be personified? So basically, Aslan is Jesus in another world. What if there was another world created?
Well, Lewis himself said the Chronicles are not direct allegories. It's a supposal, and you just outlined the supposal right there.
And I love that. I'm thinking, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
English prof makes a new word.
but Aslan himself said, and that's why this line is so important to keep in. I have the book in front of me. He says, you know, there I have another name. You must learn to know me by that name. This was the very reason why you were brought to Narnia, that by knowing me here for a little, you may know me better there. He says it. This is the reason why I brought you to Narnia. That there's no other reason. It wasn't because I really need you to, you know, fight some battles for me. I really need you to do this for me, because I can't do it by myself. It's about him. It's about knowing
Which really Aslan. Ties so much together. I mean, I've read people criticize the movie saying, well, why did he bring little kids? How come he, you know, why did he have to bring little kids in? Why couldn't he have just done it himself? That makes no sense. I'm thinking, you're right. It would make no sense if that's all it was. And, you know, it gets even more layered later with Silverchair, with him telling Eustace, you would not have been calling to me unless I'd been calling to you first. But that's a whole different movie, and that we will hopefully be discussing one day.
Well, it's the whole theme of the not only the Bible, but all kinds of literature is the little guy, the one, the person least expected.
The Hobbit.
It's almost overdone a lot.
The kid from Tatooine.
What was that?
The kid from Tatooine.
Yes, well, that's exactly what I was thinking. Luke Skywalker, you know, it's not the highly trained Jedi Masters. It's, you know, little Luke off on his desert planet instead of, you know, the mighty men of Gondor or the mystical elves in Lord of the Rings. It's the little hobbit, the person you wouldn't expect. That's why Aslan chose children to do his work in Narnia. And I've of course, also repeated that has its parallels in the real world.
That was well said.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is what I love to call deep doctrinal magic. And for more of that, yeah, just stop by Narnia Christianity. We have a lot of good stuff there and my little book there. We also have many, many topics talking about, hey, Narnia is not allegory. It's a symbolic supposal. That's okay. That's all right. In fact, it's in a lot of ways, that's superior. Symbolic is superior to allegory. There's shades of meaning that are unlocked instead of just, well, this equals that. There's a mathematical correlation. And what was it you said? Yeah, Lucy and Susan are Mary Magdalene and Martha. And I guess Edmund would be Lazarus. And then over here, I don't know who Pater Twig is supposed to represent. Maybe Blind Bartimaeus or something.
You know, I was just thinking, what would you think sometime in a future episode – we could bring on, I don't know, this could be really fun, if we brought on a couple of the controversies, or as the British would say, controversies, the big ones like Susan or Emeth. We could do a whole podcast about that sometime.
I would love that. Now, do you mean by Susan, do you mean like Susan Warrior Princess? No.
I mean the problem of Susan, as it's called.
Oh, what were you saying, Jim Fan?
Lipstick and nylon.
Oh, yes. Yes, Susan.
Could you forget?
Susan who lost her salvation, yes, as is often perceived. That would be fascinating. And then Emeth, who was never saved yet, got into Narnia anyway. Those are always very frequently discussed topics, both in Narnian Christianity and anywhere else on the forum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had a whole discussion on Emeth in Oxford last October or so. And I have an interesting little perspective on that, but that's for another discussion. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it.
I would love to hear that sometime, absolutely.
Well, this was really, really fun. I appreciate it. This was great. Doc, welcome to the council.
I loved being here, really, and I can't wait to do it again sometime. If we can handle the population on the computer.
Yeah, I mean, having up to five people can get difficult. Yeah. Well, again, everyone, thank you very much for listening. If you want to email questions, then probably in the future, I'm not sure I'll be able to get every question in, but we will try to get certainly some into every episode. We just thought we'd go ahead and answer a whole bunch of these and make a whole Q&A episode out of it. But just send an email with the subject line podcast to rillian@narniaweb.com. If you send them to the other members of the council, then it's probably not going to get to me very quickly. So just go ahead and email me at rillian@narniaweb.com.
Yeah, don't send it to me.
Yeah, you can email webmaster@sparrowroom.net is yours.
Yeah.
And Doctor, what's your Narnia Web email if people want to email you for your personal thoughts on something that's not going to make it on the podcast?
Well, you could always private message me on the forum.
Yeah, that might be best.
On Ransom, and you can find me. That might be best. I do have my email. This is not narniaweb.com, though, but it's narnia@faithfusion.net. So it's FAITHFUSION.net. And that will definitely get to me, and would appreciate any feedback. But of course, specific podcast related questions would best be directed toward our podcast host,
Podcasting Prince. Jim Man got it. We'll break him in. We'll break him in. He's a newbie here. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Are you
Jim
not
Van.
The podcast?
What?
Are you not the podcast host? Yeah,
I'm the podcasting prince. Who the king is, I have no clue.
Okay. see. Well, we know
that's Aslan.
Yes. Aslan, absolutely. Aslan the true king.
Always the High King.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a prince over all the rest. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Doc. Thank you very much, Jim Fan. And this is the Narnia Web Council signing off. Bye.
Bye.
That was way too much fun.